It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here, as usual, for serving our public as much as we can in an hour, I guess. Welcome to everybody who's heard us before, all the steadies, all the fairly news. And if you're one of the new news, when we know there are some, because we pretty much get a chance to pass it along to somebody during the course of the week, then try to stick around and you'll learn something in the next hour. We'll promise you that for sure. How useful it'll be to you, you never know. But believe me, if you got anything on your mind, there are other people that have the same thing on their minds. Therefore, instead of us just talking about the things we want to talk about all morning, if you want to interrupt and get the subject changed to what's on your mind, just pick up the phone, dial 904-222-8255, and we will put you on immediately and change the subject to whatever's on your mind. Anything financial, which is, you know, what doesn't finance touch? So pretty much anything that is on your mind, we will always get you an answer. If we don't know it, we will get it during the week, and we'll get back to you next week on the program. So 904-222-8255. Lot going on. Those of you who carried over from the real estate show heard Howard tell you that it was a good week in the market, actually, despite yesterday being kind of a letdown or come down or whatever. But you can't go too many days in a row without a little pullback, correction, whatever, because the market tends to get ahead of itself once in a while. And this week, it was just solid all the way. And the little bit on Friday was kind of a nothing in the big scheme of things. So we're happy that the sentiment was good, that the results were good. And we have an absolute forecast for you that over the next few months, the market is going to go up or down or stay the same.
I have no idea at this point. It's been the trickiest
year. Little mic problem.
Oh, there it is.
There we
okay.
Go.
Yeah, it's been the trickiest year to figure out, and I'm going to talk about that actually in the market wrap here. But July has quietly turned into a pretty decent month.
Mm-hmm.
The Nasdaq's now rallied 7.3% since the beginning of the month, and I can't figure out how that happened. The S&P is also sneaking up on a 5% game, while the Dow, which did not get hit as hard on the way down, is up 3.7%. It's a really strange result when we're more or less 100% sure that the Fed is going to do a 75 basis point hike next week, and an economy that is clearly weakening at this point. I mean, I don't think there's any way around that today.
I am ready now to commit and say that we are in a recession.
I've been saying it for weeks. So
yeah, I've been leaning that way. I haven't been quite as assertive as you have been. And we could be wrong. We could be proven wrong.
It's possible.
But I think the chances of that are very, very low.
And the other thing is inflation hasn't peaked yet. So it looks like it's close, but it hasn't actually happened. So who knows? That's where we are today. Lots of mixed signals. Very confusing. I have more to talk about, but it looks like we have a caller.
Good morning. It looks like Marky May.
Good morning. Let's jump right into it, okay?
Let's do.
All right. I just recently sold a nice chunk of Apple, and it bothers me that I did that, but they got a lot going on. But I actually took that proceed and purchased Intel because of what's going on politically. So what do you guys think about that move?
Well, I think that Mr. Pelosi might agree with you that chip makers are the way to go. He just bought a big chunk of options a few weeks ago.
I'm following him.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
Why not?
Yeah, I think he bought Nvidia, but options, but you know, they're in the same business. So there is that vote coming up, or maybe it already happened. I'm not sure. That would make it easier for us to produce chips domestically. And I know that that's been a big push ever since COVID hit, is to create factories here. Now, that can go one of two ways. Either that works out great for the industry and they're fully supplied, there isn't a shortage anymore, or creates a lot more competition and prices fall, and it's not great for the chip makers, but it's part of doing business too. Obviously they're all in on it because there's five new multi-million, hundreds of million dollars poured into plants going up. Apple stock, I still love it. I mean, it's, I don't think that they are clearly they're dominating the cell phone industry. Did you keep any of it or did you sell out entirely?
Kept one share, I think, by accident.
One share. Okay.
A token.
Yeah. So not, you're basically out of it. But they're both in technology, and the fact of the matter is when interest rates move, technology's been moving more or less in lockstep with each other. So as chip makers fell this first half of the year, so did Apple, so did Amazon, so did Facebook. They all somewhat moved together, so I'm not sure that I'm not sure that would be such a big difference between the two. Now, I could be wrong about that. And chip makers actually this week rebounded a decent amount. And I believe they actually, the chip maker index crossed its 50-day moving average.
50-day?
Yeah, it's 50-day, but not the 200 yet. So so that's a positive sign, but it's not a sign that we're back. If it crossed the 200, I'd be much more bullish on it.
Yeah, you know, when you buy and sell individual stocks, that you're carrying a type of risk that we do not dabble in very much, called individual stock risk. We would buy the SOX index or the QQQ or something like that. We do have quite a few clients who have some individual stocks, but it's usually things that they brought in or they bought on a direct order. They told us that they want some. And generally speaking, we do not handle that thing that way.
That's smart advice.
It's one thing if you're dealing with your own money like you are. It's another thing when you're investing other people's money. And we feel very responsible for all the forms of risk in the portfolio. That's one that we can avoid and generally do avoid, which is not as much fun as what you're doing. So, if you're right,
did you say not as painful or fun?
Well, you will feel the pain of the loss much harder than you will feel the pleasure of the gain, as the old saying goes.
The other thing is, both of those are very much large blue chip companies. I mean, you really, in the long term, I doubt you can go wrong with either one. Mm-hmm. It's really just a matter of what's going to go up in the short term. If you're playing that game, that's a tough one to predict.
It is. But let's take a look. Because it's Intel, let's take a quick look here. What's going on out there?
Yeah, look at the chart, if you don't mind, real quick.
We can pull that up. Can you hold through a break, and we'll pick it up on the other side with the actual chart?
Absolutely.
Thank you very much. We'll be right with you. Okay, the music's playing. We've got several things to do before we take the phone call. Again, right after the break, I will also introduce the trivia question, and then if Marky wants to take a shot at it, he'll get a chance. So there's much more to say, much more to do, and believe me, this discussion isn't over yet, because the way of the world is changing, and I think in the long run, it's changing in a very positive way. So we'll see how that translates into the results that Marky's hoping for, I guess. All right. There's so much to say, so little time. But we'll get right at it after the break, pay some bills. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are going to get back to the phone in just a second, but I did want to introduce the trivia question brought to you, as usual, by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. Let's talk about your wallet.
Okay.
You reach for that about sometimes once a week at the gas pump, and when it takes it out now and puts it back, there's a difference in weight, right? This is about how much extra we're paying since Biden took over. The average, I'm not going to tell you the stats on this thing. I'm going to say that it's the average F-150 owner driving an average number of miles a year and getting an average number of miles per gallon for an F-150. So the average F-150 owner is spending how much more a month now than on the day Biden was inaugurated? It's a number of whole dollars. You don't have to worry about the cents. I've got a nice little bracket on it. That said, thank you, Marky, for holding.
Marky Mays here, and I'm going to go ahead and throw another curveball at you regarding that trivia question. I'm going to guess. I'm going to say about $425 more.
That's high based on the averages. It's probably really close to what a lot of people are actually paying, but I'll get into that after we get the answer revealed. But I appreciate it. Now, we got a bracket. I'll make it even better. You're quite a bit high, but not that high.
Okay.
There, that clarified absolutely nothing, I'm assuming.
Yeah, so I pulled up the charts while we were on the break, and it's really interesting. The year-to-date chart, I mean, they look almost identical, and that's what I was talking about earlier with interest rates really driving the market. So technology stocks were down. As of mid-June, they were both down about 23%, roughly. And then in the recent rally, Apple has outgained Intel substantially. So Apple's only down 13% this year, but Intel's still down about 23%. They really haven't rallied very much. So, but then if you go back and look at their 10-year averages, Apple has just destroyed Intel in terms of gains. 10-year annualized on Intel is 7.5%, and Apple is 23.6%. So it's not even close, and the recent numbers look even worse for Intel and better for Apple. So that is, it's kind of like the tale of two companies. So if you're a value investor and you're looking at this, I mean, Intel looks like a much better value, but Apple looks like they're just, all the momentum in the world is with them. So it really depends what you're trying to accomplish and what your goal is for that investment.
Well, profit would be one of them. That's on the top of the list. And so that's a great analysis of that chart. I saw it as year to date, and it appeared that it was as low as it's been in quite some time. And
yep.
Then this stimulus package coming on board. And then, of course, Apple has some internal issues and some other layoffs.
Yep.
And so I got a little queasy at that. So I think I made that move. It doesn't mean it's permanent, though.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's every time you play around in individual stocks, it's a risk. But this looks pretty good. And the other thing is with Intel, you're getting a really nice dividend at 3.64%. And with Apple, you're only giving up a 0.58% dividend. So you've upped your. It's the based on the current price. That's what my software is telling me anyway. Their annual dividend is. So you.
And I thought of that also is that if someone owned a large bit of shares in a high dividend company, and that like a utility of some sort. And it really didn't move much throughout the years, just up and down, sawtooth, up and down. But they're still reaping that reward. They're just basically getting paid a high interest rate for holding their money, more or less, in a sense.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That's as long as you don't lose principal value.
Right.
That is true.
But you can't get that kind of interest rate unless you put your principal at risk. So if you're a high-income investor, you know you got to take some risk.
Well, you guys did a – you've – done a super job of confusing me further. I want to thank
you. Well, thank you. That's our goal.
That's our pleasure.
Yeah. And,
I have a quick question for you, though.
Most likely, I'll eventually move out of Intel and probably get back into the momentum, like you said.
Right. But quick question. Do you have a taxable gain on your Apple?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Okay. I hope you find some places between now and the end of the year to offset it. If for some reason Intel were to go down, you might want to take the loss against the other gain. Other than that, look at what's going on in the world and in the industry itself and in our economy. And we are in dire need of getting the chip makers back into the States. And Intel is building some fabulous factories. They did put the one in Ohio on hold for a while, but I think that's more of a political statement than a business decision. But you know they're going to grow.
Right. I mean, Well, we'll pick up this conversation at another time, and we'll see
I'd like
where
that.
We're at.
That sounds great. Thank Call us back when you know how it went.
Yeah.
When I'm in profit, thank you.
There you go. Yeah.
We'll love it.
Good
thank
luck.
You.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, that's interesting. The discussion of individual stocks is always interesting, but it's never easy. And it just really isn't something we pride ourselves on.
No, I do not. I don't. People, it's probably the most frequent question I get or one of them, but mm-hmm. it's, you know, it's just not what we do. We're not really.
You remember years ago.
I still love to talk about it, but I just, it's not, I don't have this crystal ball, and that's what makes it difficult.
Years ago on the Fox Saturday morning shows, there were 4 half-hour shows in a row. That was back when I was at the other station, and I always recorded them and listened when I got home. But there was one show on there called Bull and Bear. And every single week, every single stock, one person would be for it and the other person would be against it.
Absolutely.
And these are longtime pros. If you can disagree that much on every single stock, it's a little risky for my blood, thank you.
I could make a case against or for either of those companies right now.
Oh, absolutely.
If you gave me a half hour to research, it'd be simple.
What industry are they in? The one that's going to save the world, like it has been lately.
But
this world does not move forward without the industry of semiconductors.
But if you want to make a case against it, interest rates working against it, mm-hmm. the economy's working against them. I mean, we're headed into, according to everyone, a global recession, so yeah. Apple is so going to sell less cell phones.
What you're saying is there's a difference in the analysis between short-term holding and long-term holding.
100%, yeah. But
long-term, but, you know what's going to happen.
And stocks don't always move in step with news. And you'll oftentimes see the best news in the world is met by selling.
Well, everybody who's ever dealt with us knows one thing for sure. The biggest indicator of a stock's direction is when I buy it or sell it. And that doesn't mean it goes up when I buy it, and it doesn't mean it goes down when I sell it. There's a lot of us out there that think this way, but we're almost always sure that we caused the problem.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Part of the service, people. I'll buy it today so that you can buy it on sale tomorrow, right?
All right. So are we are we at the start of another bull market, or is this a bear market bounce?
I'll let you know.
That is the
someday.
Question. And that is why this is so confusing, because, again, I could make a case for either one. Let's take a look at both sides. First, bullish sentiment is in the tank, and that is a very good sign for the market going up. Semiconductors, as I just mentioned, recently broke above their 50-day moving average, and as did the S&P 500, another bullish sign. This rally is on below average volume, and most solid rallies are on below average volume. Counterintuitive, but it's true. And so that's a bullish sign. The breadth of stocks making solid moves higher has been supportive. So that's another one. This isn't just a few mega cap stocks bringing the market up like we saw a few years back. This is a solid rally across the board. That's a good sign. Yet remain skeptical, and there's a huge downside risk right now. So what happens next Thursday if second quarter GDP comes in negative and we fall into a technical recession? They may not declare it as a recession, but it is technically, that is the definition. I think that's a pretty likely scenario, but I do not know how the market will digest that news. I have no idea.
Been watching the leading indicators?
Yeah. I mean, it's
not
great.
They're pointing the wrong direction.
So on the other side of that argument, jobless claims topped the magic number of 250,000 this week for the first time in forever. That's a negative.
You probably remember for the last several weeks, many, many weeks, in fact, we talk about the jobless claims over and over and over, and we say, actually, what they did, up a little, down a little, whatever, is totally irrelevant unless the number's 250 or greater.
And that just happened.
Guess what?
This week.
Yep.
And they've been trending up for 8-10 weeks now, mm-hmm. so that just not a great sign there. It's one of the most reliable indicators of a recession is that 250 number. And then there's some key spots on the yield curve that are inverted right now, another key sign of a recession. The housing market has slowed dramatically in recent weeks, which is also not a great sign. Commodity prices have been crashing, which is great for bringing down inflation, but not a great sign of demand weakening. So, or it is a great sign of demand weakening, which is not a great sign for the economy. So There's just so many conflicting signals out there once again.
As we've been saying, this is the most confusing recession ever, if it is one.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly appears to us that it is one. Much more to say about this when we come back, because one of those indicators that is just, to me, kind of off the wall right now is the earnings season we're
mm-hmm.
in. And if this is a recession, give me more. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
A reminder that lines are open, 904-222-8255. And the trivia question remains out there. How much is the average F-150 owner paying in gasoline per month more than on Biden's inauguration day? And I'm going to cut the range a little bit. It's under $400. That's still a big range.
Mm-hmm.
All right, before we wrap up this whole market wrap, the earnings season is worth some insight, I think, which I will, of course, turn over.
Yeah, it's been, I would say, pretty darn good so far. It's still early.
Yeah.
We're probably about a third to less than halfway through.
Yeah. Really big time.
Yeah, but so far, a lot of surprises to the upside, which I don't think many people would have predicted last week or even a month ago.
Not these kind of numbers. Why don't you give the numbers out before we take the phone?
It's not something that I printed. Oh, do you have them with you?
Yeah, I do, actually. The earnings beat rate is 69.7%, where the average long-term is 59.4%, and the revenue beats are 72.1%, and that usually comes in below the earnings.
Yeah, actually, that's a really strong revenue number.
These are astounding numbers that don't fit into
the recession narrative.
I know. It's crazy. Guidance is down to only slightly positive, but that doesn't indicate recession either.
No.
That's why this whole thing is so difficult. Good morning, Chuck.
Hey, good morning, guys. Next week is big week.
Yep.
You got Apple, Microsoft, Facebook, Google, and the Federal Reserve. And then, like you guys were just talking about, some key economic reports.
Including the first read of the GDP for the second quarter.
Yeah. But I think the key to this market is Apple, for sure. And they're probably going to miss, and then they're going to pull back. But the key to this whole market is their early September event, when they're going to have the biggest lineup of new products that they've ever had. And I think as Apple goes up or down, so does the market, because it's such a key weighted in part of the indexes.
Absolutely. Such a huge part of SPY.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
I think I see it pulling back after the earnings, but that's okay, because the early September event, the stock is going to creep and grind its way higher, I think, to 160, 170 by that event, and then that event will come up, because there's been so many leaks of all the new products that are coming out from Apple that I've seen. I mean, it's just very impressive.
All right. So Chuck's seeing a buying opportunity, but not yet.
Not yet, right.
And not until wait a couple of days after Apple reports earnings, after the sellers have been cleaned out, and then I'm going to start accumulating a position. I go in and out of it, but I think Apple is definitely the key to this market.
Yeah. Are you old enough, Chuck, to remember the old saying, what's good for General Motors is good for America?
Yeah, the 60s. Yeah,
that has changed now. It's what's good for Apple is good for America, because it's about the same magnitude of influence on all of us and the entire nation's economy. So we'll watch with you, and let's keep track of it.
Definitely.
It's very interesting. Do you want to take a shot at the trivia before we go?
I'll say 300.
300 is still high, but thank you for getting the bracket whittled down even more.
Okay.
Have a good one. Thanks for the call.
You too. Thank you.
Thanks, Chuck.
You want to jump into, you got time, you got about 5 minutes, millionaire time?
I can do that. I've been holding this one off.
We've been promising this, and it just kind of got real busy. So we want to go back to the Who Am I Millionaire, because Adam has promised me that he does not believe I'll get it.
We'll see. Maybe. So this segment is something I've been doing for a while now, off and on, and we've gotten a lot of requests for it. So I guess it's fairly popular.
Yeah.
It's really about realizing the American dream.
Exactly.
I want to talk about people that came from nothing and through hard work and a little bit of luck and a great work ethic is really what the common thing amongst all these people is, the work ethic. And they realized it and became millionaires, or in some cases billionaires. This one is a millionaire. But he was born in 1904 in Springfield, Massachusetts, to German-born immigrant parents. Theodore Gissell had a distinctly middle-class upbringing. His father managed the family brewery, and his mom was a homemaker. The brewery was forced to close because of Prohibition, but his dad was appointed to manage the city's public park system, so he landed on his feet. They were not super poor, but not rich. He attended Dartmouth College, where he rose to the rank of editor-in-chief of the college humor magazine, the Dartmouth Jack-o'-Lantern. However, he was caught drinking in a room during Prohibition and was stripped of that title and forced to leave the magazine. He continued to write articles under a pen name that he would submit, and no one knew it was him. After Dartmouth, he entered Lincoln College, Oxford, intending to study English Lit. He met his future wife at Oxford, who encouraged him to give up literature and take up drawing based on the talent she had seen. He left Oxford without a degree and returned to the United States without a job. He began submitting articles and drawings to magazines, book publishers, and advertising agencies. His first cartoon was published in July of 1927 in the Saturday Evening Post, for which he was paid $25. And the single success encouraged him to move from Springfield to New York City. In New York, he accepted a job as a writer and an illustrator for the humor magazine Judge. After about 6 months, he started publishing cartoons in the Judge under the same pen name he used in college. In 1928, one of his cartoons mentioned a popular bug spray used at the time. The manufacturer liked the work and used the cartoon in an advertising campaign. The campaign was so popular, it ran for 13 years, and the tagline, "Quick, Henry, the Filth," became part of American pop culture. As his work got popular, he was increasingly hired by magazines such as Life and Vanity Fair and companies like Ford, NBC, and Standard Oil. His success started to create a decent amount of wealth, which they used to travel extensively. On one of these journeys, the noise of the ship's engine inspired him to write a children's book, which was promptly rejected by somewhere between 20 and 43 publishers. Ultimately, it was published by one of his buddies from Dartmouth at Vanguard Press. During World War II, he turned to political cartoons, which he published more than 400 of in 2 years. He was very supportive of Roosevelt's handling of the war, and eventually joined the military to write propaganda films for them. For his efforts, he was rewarded the Legion of Merit. After the war, he moved to La Jolla, California, and returned to children's books. In 1954, Life magazine published a study that said children were not learning to read because children's books were boring. The education director at one of the big publishing firms came up with a list of 348 words that kids needed to know, and he asked Theodore to cut his list to 250 words and create a book that kids couldn't put down and that used all of the words. He used 236 of those words and returned 9 months later with The Cat in the Hat. Dr. Seuss continued to write books until his death in 1991, most of which still sell better today than any new books on the market, despite several attempts to cancel him. Growing up the son of German immigrants in Springfield, who would have thought this young man, Theodore Seuss Cassell, would go on to become the most prolific children's author in the history of the United States?
I got it.
You did.
And so did your mother.
Okay.
How about that?
Yeah. It was. I didn't know the history and all the things he did in his life. It was pretty impressive.
Yeah. I started out at Norman Rockwell.
Okay. Yeah.
But when you get into all that other stuff, then that was ruling him out. Once he got the Saturday Evening Post job,
right.
I don't think he went all those other crazy directions. And I don't remember him ever being a kids person. So I changed that one to Dr. Seuss.
Yeah. So he was in advertising. He worked for the military. It was pretty amazing the amount of things he accomplished in his life.
And it's just a darn shame that he's been canceled.
Well, he hasn't, though. That's the great thing, that his books are still bestsellers, and they're outselling almost every single children's book on the market today.
And a bunch of the usual suspects tried to get rid of him.
It's ridiculous.
It is absolutely ridiculous. Cool. You just never know, do you? All right, we have a lot to do. I'm going to surprise everybody in the next segment, most likely, because there's been some amazing new findings in economics, and you're not going to believe what you're about to hear. But I also want to ask you another big question. Since we're talking about the failed Biden administration and what it's costing us all, I have a simple question for everybody. How long would the baby formula shortage last under Trump? And yes, that is a rhetorical question. It is not the trivia question of the day. Do you believe this is still getting worse?
I don't.
I shake my head and wonder. All right, we're going to pay some more bills, take one more break. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
Yeah, trivia question is still out there. How much more does the average Ford F-150 truck owner pay now in gasoline per month than on the day Biden was inaugurated? And we know it's under $300, but we also know it's a long ways over zero. We're, just telling Adam, the administration is now taking credit for the 51-cent drop, I think it was, and kind of ignoring the fact that it's up $1.99. So it's like going to the doctor and having him tell you you're way overweight, you got to lose 250 pounds. So you come back to him and say, I lost 50 pounds. I should be good to go now, right? I don't think so. Don't really think so. All right, well, the numbers are in, and you're all going to be stupefied. Ready for this one? Tax cuts work. But you never heard that before, huh? The numbers are in for the Trump administration. And they always say in D.C., tax cuts for the rich, tax cuts for the rich. It gets so monotonous. But the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017, or TCJA, cut taxes for everyone, but the media would not tell you that because it doesn't fit with their narrative. So the first year of data is in. That's been 2018, and I'll give you the numbers in a moment after the phone call. Good morning, Phil.
I have to cut it short, the Van Wee gurus of finance, because
no problem.
My health is very challenging today, and I apologize for that.
Not a problem. I'm glad to hear from you.
I couldn't even call from your predecessor's show. Thank you. Prayers are welcome, as usual. I'm going to say $145 more, and I'm probably wrong. If I win, play it on, pass it on, whatever it is, T-shirt, public scar to somebody else.
If you did, we would, but you're a little low, and we appreciate the effort, and the bracket is now getting closed.
You know, if nobody guesses it, you can just put it up there again next week, you know, and I won't call him again.
Fair enough.
You know, I'm only trying to figure out which one of you is more highly intelligent financial, but it's kind of close, so someday.
Me by a mile.
No way.
When we have lunch, I'll figure it out.
Sounds good, Phil. Get better.
Thanks. Hands down. Everybody knows that.
No, that's not true.
Anyway, you ready? Here's the real numbers. People making between $50,000 and $100,000 average cuts between 15 and 17%. Remember that, I think it was, if my memory serves me right, it was something like 2380 that the average, the lesser household incomes saved. All right, the next tranche, incomes from 100 grand to 500 grand, average cuts from 11 to 12% compared to 15 to 17. Over 500,000 incomes, average cuts were no more than 9% in any group, but over a million, the average tax cut was less than 6%. So, is 6% of the million a greater number of dollars than 15% of 50? Absolutely. But you kind of have to look at the percentages, because tax cuts for the rich don't mean that the rich was outdoing everybody else. Rich were outdoing everybody else. It worked exactly like it was proposed to all of us, and you won't hear this in the mainstream media. But Look at the other times it's been tried. I think my first recollection of tax cutting was John F. Kennedy. And he said, believe it or not, the tax rates are just too high, and if we want to generate more revenue, we need to cut the tax rates.
Wait, he was a Democrat?
Not a today's Democrat, obviously, but yes, he was. And remember also that various times back in that era, tax rates had reached as high as 93%.
Yeah, I do know that. That's insane.
Yeah, you can't expect people to get up and go to work for 7 cents.
No.
Or 10 cents. Or they're hovering around 70% for a long time. If for 30 cents on the dollar, am I going to work Saturday too?
Well, in California, they do it for about 40. So
you got that right. Then the next time, when I was, of course, much more aware of these things, was the Reagan cuts. And the Congress was so backwards, as usual. I guess they were imitating themselves. It was that they let Reagan actually cut the taxes. Remember, the top bracket at that point, Reagan took down to 28%. And it cured our problems. But they made him delay implementation for 2 years. So it delayed the problem solving for 2 years. Brilliant, folks. Absolutely brilliant. Then remember when George W. Bush came in, and he actually had two rounds of tax cutting. The first one went into effect before 9/11, as I recall. And had it not been for those two tax cuts, I think the impact of 9/11 would have been much more lasting, much more severe, and much more devastating to our economy. But we actually snapped out of it pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
So my last rhetorical question for the day goes back to 1961, when the Kingston Trio asked, when will they ever learn? And the rhetorical question, of course, has a rhetorical answer. Never! Congress doesn't learn because they don't pay attention to facts. Tax cuts work. I like that. Now, want another dumb one?
Sure.
I love, you know me, I just love all these dumb headlines, dumb stories, and dumb people that write them. No, Mr. Manchin, taxes don't cause inflation. Now, how would you argue this point? Well, if you are, there are two of them now. This is part of the big lie, by the way. This was ratified, so to speak, by another one. I'm trying to remember who wrote this one. Can't remember, but she's an economist with a lot of big degrees and has served in the administration of even for a while of Joe Biden. But here's her argument. When spending outweighs the tax revenue, increasing aggregate demand causes the inflation. Okay, we're going along with all this kind of stuff. So people had a lot of money given to them over the last couple of years, and the result of that pretty directly is inflation, especially the original $1.9 trillion that was sent out, which I argued for, and I still do, was probably needed at the time because we were in a world of hurt with the shutdown and the pandemic. But that got us out of it. And if you read the statistics about how fast it got us out, the unemployment rate dropped quickly from 14-something to 6-something, and the economic growth rate went over 6. And all of that was before they started talking about any more spending. So what if higher taxes impair supply? No doubt the pandemic and the war in Ukraine have contributed to inflation, they say. So here's the reasoning and the fallacy. Tax increases don't cause inflation if those tax increases are applied to individuals, because it does cut their spending and it does create lesser available capital. Therefore, demand falls. Therefore, by supply and demand rules, you will see less inflation if you raise taxes. I don't advocate it. I think it's the dumbest thing ever. But the argument, the second half of the argument she makes, is that if you raise taxes on corporations,
that's inflationary.
Yeah. She said it won't, and she can prove it by the individuals, but included in her tax increase proposal is corporations. Yeah. If your corporation increases its costs by, let's say, 6% from the current tax rate to what they want to go to, you think that we're going to get a 6% decrease in prices on products and services from that corporation, or zero, or more likely to maintain their margin, something positive up to and including 6%. That is inflationary in my book. So the only way you can make these arguments is by arguing both sides and not explaining that you've just jumped from one side to the other. And it was done again this morning by another one of the geniuses in D.C. Here's her. It's Kimberly Clausing. She's a professor of tax. Oh, ready for this? UCLA?
Shocking.
Yeah, shocking. Her conclusion is very simple. All told, Senator Manchin, now is an excellent time to raise taxes.
It's so wrong on so many levels. It's terrible.
I shake my head and I just wonder and I cry for our future. If people like this are allowed to keep writing, publishing, and so on. November's coming, folks. Use it. Use it very wisely, and perhaps we'll recover what we used to have. $179.25, but that's based on some usage statistics that you're going to exceed, probably. See you next week. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.